Tell me, where will I go and find that? Because I do not recall that specific statement, but I cannot tell you that I remember everything. But just guide me. Tell me exactly where I will go. Has it been printed anywhere in the press, or it was one of those?
Mr. Ellis, I just want you to listen to me, you know. The problem is that somehow when they don't listen, in her acceptance speech, you know, you understand what I mean?
Yes.
Right.
But where exactly can I go and find that in print?
Mr. Ellis, the speech came on radio and on TV.
No, but somebody would... it had to be published somewhere. I do not recall, because this is not the first time that this issue of parity has come to the fore. It has been raised quite a number of times. And at
it has been out there.
And at no point have I heard anybody refer to this clear and unambiguous statement by the Prime Minister that the parity would have been maintained. And I want to see for myself whether she said parity or differential. Because you can have a differential, but the differential may not necessarily remain the same.
Mr. Ellis.
So I need to find exactly where it is. Because don't tell me that it was made in the acceptance speech, and the only person who will remember it is you, and nobody else, and I can't go anywhere and find it. I am going to do my search, but I was only hoping that you could have helped me to narrow down the search by telling me, well, you know, it was said then in the acceptance speech, and if you go to page X or page Y of the newspaper, or you go to Barbados Today, you would find exactly what she said. So let me search.
I believe, Mr. Ellis, if you go to her acceptance speech, that you would find it.
All right. Well, let me look for it.
It can't be that difficult. I remember, you know, Mr. Ellis.
You have it? When you saw it in writing?
Mr. Ellis, I got it recorded. It etched in my brain because it jumped. You see, things just jump out at me.
All right. No problem.
And that jump out at me. I said, well, good. I will sit back and enjoy my parity. And instead of getting my parity, I get a wax black and a brigadon black. The same pensioners that ain't get no buffer. Remember, the public workers get a 5% as a buffer. The non-contributory ones get a $70 lead as a buffer. The contributory pensioners ain't get anything as a buffer. But we get the 40, the 150 a day. We get a second row tax when the row tax didn't expire. We get a second row tax that taking mine into double. The effect of transport, cost, whatever, everything we get. But we ain't get the buffer, Mr. Ellis. So that's why it jumped out at me.
How many you got no buffer? What you mean? Are you talking about the contributory and non-contributory still?
Yes, Mr. Ellis.
So isn't there a differential between the two nonetheless?
A differential?
Yeah, in other words, there is a difference between the two. The two of them are not on par.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, please.
The contributory pensioners did not get an increase. So they ain't getting a buffer. The National Insurance, realizing that the non-contributories was going past the bottom rung of the contributories, raise theirs to $10 above them. So the difference between the bottom rung and the non-contributory is $10. So it would benefit a fella now to get him back, he lump sum, and take a non-contributory. And Mr. Ellis, when you check the numbers, the number of non-contributory pensioners as against the number of contributory pensioners, you can see the majority is who get left out. And I don't know why you find that to be so difficult. And it can't be all out there because everybody hear it from me. They may hear it from me, Mr. Ellis. It was said in her acceptance speech, and her acceptance speech cannot be close to Garden Secret. The whole of Robert Street, the block.
All right, I have a comment which was made here. You can see it on the BLP website. May the 8th, 2018. This is the clarity that I was seeking, okay? In addition, this is what the newspaper says. In addition, Motley promised that should the BLP regain the government from June 1st, non-contributory pensions would be increased to $225 per week, payable every 2 weeks. She later explained that the minimum contributory pension would also be increased to keep it in line with the increase in non-contributory pensions. That is the quote. Okay?
You quote the date on that?
This is, the date 18. On this is May the 8th, 2018.
Good. The acceptance speech was made on the morning of the 25th. You can get that?
Sorry, May the 20th. No, I will have to look for that. Yeah.
But yeah, you can look for it, myself. It's no close to guarded secret. Mm. I don't know why when they just feel like everything is a close to guarded secret.
No, but you know, all I asked you to do, I'm not here to run from truth, you know. I'm here to
hold on a minute. From the truth.
Hold on a minute. I'm here to get to the bottom of it all. And when if you come to me and you are going to make that kind of comment, as much as possible, assist me by being able to make direct reference to it. I mean, I can search for it myself, but the acceptance speech may well have been one of those that was an ad-lib speech as opposed to something that was written down. And, you know, generally speaking, Ms. Motley speaks like that anyhow. So to tell
I
me,
was recorded,
so I would then have. Why can't I go and listen to a recorded speech now?
Mr. Ellis,
I can't listen to a recorded speech now. I don't have a transcript of it.
There's paid employees, Mr. Ellis. You are the
Anyhow,
boss. You got paid employees.
Let's move on, because you obviously know what I got and what you don't have. Sorry.
Well, Mr. Ellis, if you can't be.
Listen,
the boss when you got
give me a break. I don't even want to discuss that. That's a little bit outrageous right now. We do not get involved in transcribing stuff, okay? So don't ask me to go right now and find it, because I can't, okay? Thank
well,
you.
I agree that you might not be able to put your hands on it now, but it has been raised by me, it has been raised by others, it has been out there a long time.
Yes, all right, let's move on to the next topic.
No, don't move yet, Mr. Ellis. Let me show you something, because you might feel that time. When Ms. Motley first mentioned about keeping the party, the first person that comment on it was Mr. Owen Arthur. He said that would break the national insurance. And I'll give you a little more information, Mr. Ellis. So you can go.
All right, let's move on.
You have a nice day, Mr. Ellis.
All right, thank you very much. I see something else here. June 11, 2018, as promised in the Barbados Labour Party's manifesto for the May 24th general elections, the two-week-old Mia Motley-led administration will raise the minimum non-contributory pension from $155 to $225 per week. Protection of our pensioners will cost approximately $18 million, said Prime Minister Mia Motley in making the announcement in Parliament a short while ago during her presentation of a mini-budget. She explained that the relativities will be maintained for minimum contributory pensions and survivor benefits and invalidity benefits within the National Insurance Scheme, which will treat to the new pensions expenditure separately. So that's another quote on it from June the 11th. Down to brass tacks. Down to brass tacks.
Mr. Ellis, a blessed day to you, sir.
Well, one after the next.
I trust that your weekend was a beautiful one. And you're looking forward to even more enjoyable week, you know? I think it's important that in the economic situation and what we're having, that we all need to, you know, show the spirit of benevolence to one and all, you know? And that's very important. And you know that our country have always been well known for that, and so much so that even when the tourists come here, and you had to talk to them, they always say, oh, Barbados is not only a beautiful place, but the people are so friendly and they feel so much at ease. And I haven't worked in the hotel industry for so many years. I know what I'm telling you. I'm sure Mr. Johnson, who've done that. And I'll tell you this, that we've had people who've always looking forward to coming back again and again. you know, and I really appreciate that, and I want the entire country to know and to encourage them to keep that kind of spirit up and that kind of attitude up, because not only for the tourists, but for us. And I usually say to them, Celeste, when I speak to them, I say, you know, we are not only just friendly because you are tourists. I always make it known to them that we are genuinely friendly people and accommodating people. And
okay, I just need to clarify something here. In light of this point, which was raised by the previous caller about the contributory and non-contributory pensions and the commitment to relativity, I think the clearest statement on this comes from the manifesto of the Barbados Labour Party. That's the last manifesto. And it speaks to raising the non-contributory pension from $155 to $225 per week, payable every fortnight. And it commits by saying, we will maintain the relativity between contributory and non-contributory pensions. And therefore, it is clear that that commitment was given in the manifesto of the Barbados Labour Party. To that extent, therefore, what actually took place was a movement away from a maintenance of that relativity, even though there was a differential. So that is the information that I have before me. Okay? Thank you very much. You were saying?
Yeah, so let me say here that in view of what was just being said, I remember Mr. Sinclair during the election campaign, he did make mention that if you are going to raise national insurance non-contributory, you'll have to raise the contributory one. He said because then there have to be that differential difference or something like that. He said you just can't do one before doing the other one. I remember him making mention of that. Now, let me move away from that. I would like to suggest to you that you remember, Mr. Ellis, that there was a time when you were going out into the community and having the views of people in the community and so on. You were taping them and things of that sort. You remember, I think, earlier this year you were doing that? You were going to shops and villages or wherever that was.
I'm not so sure. Having people, but I know it is part and parcel of what is done from time to time.
Right. Now, I want to suggest that you take that up again in light of the cries and the moans and the groans of people who are complaining about the water bill situation. I think it's very important, not only just that one or two of us on the radio might come and talk about it, but I believe that it's important to hear this from persons in the community, because this is, in my view, it's very hard on the on the poor, and I don't want to use a stronger term other than that. In my view, I don't know if it was well thought out to have put it on the water. And then, one of the things that I heard said by one of the officers from Waterworks, that if you, the government is saying it's not a water raise, well, it's not an increase on water, but then it's on the water bill. And I remember hearing an officer, she came and she said, the bill comes to you and you pay whatever amount, it's not going to go only on water. They're going to take out $175 for the other things and whatever. And that's what's going to happen. And the remainder, they will show on the raise on your water. I do remember the officer saying that. Now, I'm no lawyer, but I believe any lawyer, even a student lawyer, had to take a matter like this to court, they could not lose, because out of the mouth of the government, they said, listen to me carefully, they said that this tax is not a water tax. Remember they said that? Therefore, if you go and you pay your water bill on that, how then could you then cut off or would threaten to cut off a person's water? When you say out of your own mouth that the tax is not on water, remember this. So you cannot then, it's a contradiction of what you're saying, because if you do that, then you're contradicting yourself. Because if my water bill is whatever, and I pay my water, how could you then cut off my water? I think that the government is unfair and taking advantage of the poorest people in this country, and I am saying to you, it is wrong. Can't happen. And you would look at the poorest, and I'll tell you that, you know what, Mr. Ellis, when I lay down something, I think I let my brain go wrong. And you know what? You know what the thought that came to me? That our country is pushing a non-communicable disease strategy and program and so on. And you're saying to Barbadians, eat what you grow and grow what you eat. Now, Mr. Ellis, tell me how in God's name you're going to push that. And then the majority of Barbadians who are the poorest people in the country who have a little kitchen garden to water to get a little cucumber or whatever. How will they do that, Mr. Ellis? Well, and then they may raise a fowl.
You know, there is nobody in Barbados who wouldn't be concerned about the poorest of the poor. The poor people in Barbados who may have difficulties meeting their commitments in this area. But there is also another dimension to the picture that faces us with respect to the general economy, the problems we face with water and sewage in the country. But let's deal with water. There is a view that we are paying far less for water than we ought to. That given the costs and the shortage and scarcity of water and all that has to be done to deliver water to the Barbadian household, that we have been conditioned to pay too little for water. Now, how do you deal with that particular challenge in the context of the concern that you raise? Because you have to look at both sides of the equation.
You want me to speak now?
Yes.
Yeah. Ms. Ellis, now you haven't said that. I don't want to say that I'm shocked to hear that. In that, when you say that water is scarce and so on, and when David Thompson put 60% on water, did you not hear?
There are two camps in Barbados. And
all right.
In the same way that everything that the Barbados Labour Party does right now, I will expect that people like you will come and criticize it. If the Democratic Labour Party is in power, I expect that people like you would support every measure they take, including the one with respect to increasing water rates by 60% back then. And every person who does not like the Democratic Labour Party would be on this radio and elsewhere saying that they're killing the poor people. This is the adversarial approach to politics that Barbados has. It's part of our democratic process. When I heard that, I didn't hear it from people that I considered to be politicians at the time. I heard it when we were in the throes of the drought and people were scrambling to get water around this country. And I heard it from people who were considered to be professionals in the area, the engineers and the specialists in that particular field.
That did not stop the moans and the groans.
And it won't stop them. It won't stop them. But we have to understand that you don't necessarily be talking to the two camps alone. There are a lot of people in the middle who want to be educated, and you know, they basically want to see what is the truth.
You know what the subtlety about this water situation is that? That, look, Ms. Ellis, I don't know if our government now believes that all of us are either silly or can't think. And what they are doing is, they are trumpeting across the country to everybody that this country is so going under the sea that we have to do, and not only that, they're want them to buy into it. This is the reason why, and I want to put this to you. I will risk, if I were a betting person, that the measures that this government has introduced, the IMF would have never introduced these draconian rent measures. It wouldn't happen.
Okay.
Wouldn't happen.
So I assume that when...
Am I right? You believe that?
Well, I can't see with you when the IMF have approved the program.
But here, but
I don't understand how.
Look at there.
You put together a program to get some money from the IMF. Go to the IMF and you say, look, this is my program. I have put this together. I want your stamp of approval. The IMF looks at the program, draws a conclusion that it will kill off your people, and says yes, nonetheless. It won't say to you, look, the program that you have put here, it's ambitious, but I think you need to tweak it here or there, because based upon our experience, if you follow that particular approach, you are likely to strangle the economy and undermine the very effort that you are involved in. So to tell me that the IMF have approved the plan that they really believe is going to strangle Barbados is, to my mind, a little far-fetched.
Mr. Ellis, don't say that. Don't say that. Mr. Ellis, can you be reasonable? If you have brought...
This one is the difference between this plan and the one that the former administration developed when Mr. Arthur said it was more draconian than the IMF program.
Yeah.
The difference is that that program was not put before the IMF for approval. This one has been.
Right. But so there you are. Mr. Arthur, the man who have done a Grenada situation, he's an economist and he knows what he's talking about. Better than me or you. And if he could say that, good dear Mr. Ellis.
He wasn't talking about this program. I haven't heard him speak about this one yet.
But he was talking about
the program, the last program that had been put before us.
But you remember the Democratic Labour Party. You heard his voice? I told that last week, you know.
Anyhow, we've had a fair amount of time together, so let's move on. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello. Hello, you're on the air.
Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. I feel you might be a bit too young to know anything about Jeanette, but sometime in the past, I think it was in the 50s, we had a hurricane by the name of Jeanette.
It was in 1955.
55, yeah. And at that time, Barbados had about 80% of board houses and about 20% was structure. So a number of the board houses were damaged or destroyed. And they had hundreds of carpenters working after Jeanette. And people used to call them stone carpenters. You know why? The need was great. And it was essential to get people roofs and the houses back in order. Similarly, when we have a terrible accident or any crisis at QQH, we ask nurses who are orphan doctors to come in and assist because it's a crisis. We in Barbados have an economic storm worse than Jeanette and Michael that just passed. The two of them put together is even not as bad as our economy. And that is the reason why it was essential to have a large cabinet. It's crisis. I don't understand how people can't see the need. Under normal circumstances, I will be bawling down the road. Why 20-odd cabinet ministers? But because of the circumstances, I can see.
Okay, but how do you guarantee that having a larger cabinet really helps you to deal with the crisis? Because On the other side of the other side of that coin, the other side of that coin is you're laying off people. You're saying how austere the situation is, and then there's a disconnect between that position and having a large cabinet in the eyes of some. That's the criticism that you're hearing. So how do you guarantee that you are going to get that kind of effort? What is so special? You articulated for me. What is so special about cabinet ministers that you believe would suggest to you that that's going to make the difference?
Okay, of course, if you give a man a job in a week's time, you can't criticize it and say it ain't worth it. You got to give it time. After a certain amount of time, I might come and criticize it and say it ain't worth the effort if I don't see results. But if I see results, I say, well done. It's just like an emergency. If people say a lot of casualties and they're not tainted, you calling people, nurses and doctors, you will criticize it. But if you get the most, you compliment the volunteers and the doctors and say, you need time. Agree?
So you believe the answer will be found in time.
Yes. If not, I will be back on the air condemning it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your input. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You on the air?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
I saw me was calling you a one-time good friend.
One time good friend?
Well, we have not been speaking closely recently, so I don't think we are enemies.
I want to suggest to you that that has nothing to do with me. I have always been here with my hands outstretched, wide open.
Okay, thank you for having me on your program. But the first question, I would like you, if you don't answer it today, answer that sometime. During the era of the Democratic Labour Party, in your opinion, have they done anything that the masses of Barbados would have benefited from? If you don't like to answer it now, you can answer it later.
I think it's not difficult to answer the question. I think, first of all, there are people associated with the Democratic Labour Party who made an effort, the best effort that they could. It was not all a situation of people who appeared not to be, not to care. Turn your radio down for me in the background because it's keeping a lot of noise. Chances are you're listening to CBC because you, over the recent past, you've listened to them. You've been so much more involved with them than us. So I suspect you're still continuing that tradition, right? Just turn it down. It's a lot of noise, so it's like a lot of...
I don't have any noise. I have my TV off.
The TV is off. But whatever you had on there just now. I think, for instance, the effort that was made in the area of alternative energy was a positive effort, as far as I can see. In the early stages of the Democratic Labour Party administration, I thought that the work which had been done in housing appeared to be significant work. In subsequent years, it seemed as though a lot of houses were left unoccupied and that sort of thing. So there were some positives associated with it, but the bigger issue is trying to control the economy and getting the economy under wraps, so to speak, and I didn't think that that was a successful effort. A lot of the allegations that are now coming out about the contracts and that sort of thing also helped to undermine the image of the Democratic Labour Party. You know that I had been critical, one, of the failure to communicate well with the people of Barbados, and I was long in the vanguard of those who felt that the procurement issues loomed too large. I looked at things like what was said by the Auditor General in his report, the Valerie, the grotto, the Barbados Water Authority building. All of these are the things that we talked about from the point of view of saying, look, there's a need to come and account to the people of Barbados for what has been done. So in that respect, I was highly critical.
All right, thank you so much for that. But what I have come here to ask to have a discussion on is that word corruption, inverted commas. It is now a buzzword, not only in Barbados, throughout the world you hear of corruption. And the gentleman had the front page of the Nation discussing it. But there has to be, it's being done so vaguely. So knowing you as well as I do, and your association with the present Prime Minister of Barbados, I am going to ask you to use your goodwill to get her not to point fingers at John, Robert, and probably Mary. She has been an attorney at law. She has had her experience in the lower house and leader of the opposition. And I think I can give her marks for some of the things that she has said, not all. And I would need her, since she is the Prime Minister of this country, to ascertain those individuals and bring them to board, and do not leave herself out, because this is not childish play.
Right.
It is doing good for the entire people of this country of Barbados.
Mr. Watts, first of all, let me say to you that I don't carry messages between politicians, and I don't, especially in circumstances where the kind of relationship that has existed between yourself and the current Prime Minister may run much deeper than any that could exist between me and her, as my being a media practitioner and she being a politician, because my recollection is that many years ago, I think she started her politics in the Democratic Labour Party.
Oh yes.
Where you have been deeply embedded over the years.
Oh yes.
And if I know both of you, I don't think that you would allow politics to stop you all from communicating, because I have never judged either of you in that particular way. You don't carry your politics on your sleeves that way. So you can get to the Prime Minister and tell her anything that you want to tell her, with a greater degree of authority than I ever would.
but let me say this. I happen to know that she used to refer to the skipper as uncle. That's a fact of life.
But she didn't refer to you so too?
No. We were not that close, because
But then she called you by your... You used to put Mr. before your name. Mr. Watts.
I am referred to by my better people as Starby Watts, and you know that very well.
Yeah, but
let me, young
people would not have called you Starby Watts. They call you Mr. Watts.
Yes, they would have. They would have. Yes. That is a fact. But let me continue. I need to have a discussion on this corruption. It is worrying me tooth and nail that it is not only being discussed in Barbados, the Caribbean, but it is worldwide, that word, corruption. And I think the present Prime Minister has the opportunity of doing her utmost to have it addressed and listen attentively to the pros and cons and see how best we can put an end to it by bringing those people whom she suggests have done illicit
things. There can't be a rush to judgment.
But no, notice this not being a rush to judgment. I want to hear her say, Robert,
no, she's,
you are...
The Prime Minister spoke about this this past weekend. And it
of
is,
course
and
did,
it is
but,
clear...
But vaguely.
But you know full well that in matters of this nature, it takes time to build evidence and that sort of thing. Because if you don't do that, you can end up with egg all over your face because you are rushing to judgment. So in time, people will give the government time. It's only May 24th that the government changed. And I want to ask you this. You lived long in this country. You've been associated with politics for a long time.
That's a fact.
You know full well that over the years, there are many, many government departments where people have complained about pilferage, stealing. That this issue of corruption is not something that just appeared. It may well seem to many people as though it's gotten worse. But perhaps it got worse, Astor B. Watts, because we, in typical Bajan fashion, like to bury our heads beneath the sand and say it don't happen here. And there are a lot of people who can tell you about it. People who work in hotels could tell you about it. You know, people all over this place, people who work in all types of companies and government departments and stuff can tell you what has gone on over the years and to what extent it appears to have gotten worse. So why are we trying to behave as though it is non-existent? Is it?
I am not thinking that we are trying to do that. But what I am talking about, the delay and the continuous finger-pointing, let us get action. Let us do the verb that is active, not the inactive verb.
I would suggest,
and get things done.
I would suggest that the government of Barbados should take its time in coming to any conclusion that is going to point an accusing finger at one person or the other. It must be given time to gather that evidence, and if after a five-year term it is unable to produce any evidence to that effect, it will stand condemned for just trying to use the allegation for partisan political purposes. That is
my last word. My last word to you. Remember the Duffus Commission. You know.
That was just one of a series of commissions that we've had in Barbados that waste taxpayers' money. This time around, Barbadians want more than that. They want more than that. More than anything else, it is not just about the past, Astor B. Watts, you know, but Barbadians looking into the future want to feel a greater degree of certainty and comfort about how their money is spent. And we don't want to create an environment where, based on all the things that have happened over the years, we create a situation where people become involved in government at one level or the other, using that as a springboard to rake off as much money as possible so that it can become rich and lord it over the other people in the country. You don't want that?
No, you certainly don't. Well, my last point, David, I sincerely hope that you read Albert Branford, not yesterday, last Sunday and yesterday. They're interesting articles to be read, and the little I know of you, you are one who like to dot your I's and cross your T's, and I would advise you to have another read of last Sunday's and yesterday. I will be coming again to discuss that with you when you are hosting the program.
Well, I am really honored that you should take time to come and talk to me here, because I must tell you, this must be the first time in at least 8 years that I have had the opportunity to speak to you in this forum. So look how the more things change, the more they remain the same. I thank you very much. A man that I have a lot of time for, I respect him quite a lot. And I mean, he's among our treasured political citizens. I mean, in his 90s now. And, you know, still rather lucid and very involved in the Democratic Labour Party politics and ultimately in the affairs of Barbados. And he must be complimented for having that kind of zeal and to be in a position where he can communicate with us as well as he does. Thanks again, Astor B. Watts.